Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Michael, here's one from Nick Spill, who is appearing in November at Miami Book Fair International.
I was born in England. My father had us all emigrate to New Zealand when I was 12 years old. And I worked there in the in the arts business until I was 30. Then I came to New York, fell in love with the city. And shortly afterwards, I met this young lady who my girlfriend at the time introduced me to, Joy. She was actually born on Miami Beach at Mount Sinai, and her parents moved to North Miami Beach. We got married, and then we visited her parents' a very old house on Miami Beach. It was a Mediterranean revival house. My mother-in-law grew up there with her irascible young brother, Jay, and it hadn't been lived in for 8 years, but Joy's parents didn't want to sell it. I think her mother was hoping secretly that we would move to the house, which we did, instead of going to California or Arizona or something like that. We moved down to this house in 1986, which, you know, had 10-pot rainstorms. You know, it was the original Cuban barrel tiled roof. We just fell in love with the house and the architecture, and we went down to South Beach, and we immediately fell in love with the Miami Beach Art Deco district. It was a fabulous area, but it was crumbling. Some of the hotels were falling apart. Others were being very cheaply or shoddily renovated. And we felt that this whole area was under siege. I guess every good story needs a location, and it needs a hero, and it needs a villain. Oh, the more villains, the better. In this case, the location was the Art Deco district itself, you know, from 5th to 15th Street, from Ocean Drive, all the way west. There was one organization that was trying to save this. It was headed by Barbara Caperman, Miami Design Preservation League. Now, I guess the hero of my story is the office manager, Ira Lieberman. And I guess I have to give you a little background to him. When he was 8 years old, he went down into his mother's basement. He lived in Brooklyn, and he lit a match, which was not a good thing because his mother was a bootlegger, and there was a still in the basement. So there was a loud explosion. Ira got singed, but he wasn't beaten or anything like that, although he did meet some of his mum's friends from Murder, Inc., like Lepke. Murder, Inc. was a gang of Jewish entrepreneurs or criminals, and they did they murdered people or ran protection rackets, and they worked with various other mobsters in the 20s and 30s. One time he told me, Lippy came up to him and said, "Son, are you having problems at school? Is anyone giving you a problem?" You know, because Ira said no, because he was afraid one of his friends might disappear. Okay, so fast forward to D-Day plus four. He's with General Patton getting onto the beaches of Normandy. He goes with Patton. He's in the Signals Corps, but he's in headquarters. And he goes all the way to the first concentration camp that they liberate, which is in the Buchenwald sort of complex. And I'm not going to spend time talking about what we already know, what they didn't know then, but they were just so shocked. But Ira did one thing. He found this kid. It was all just rag and bones and skin. His name was Oscar, and he literally picked him up and carried him out of the camp, put him in his Jeep, went back to his camp and fed him and looked after him, and eventually saw him back into the U.S., you know, safe and healthy. And the reason why I know that, and I got to make a little detour here. Ira told some wild stories, but I eventually, as an investigator, I could verify them. I had lunch with Oscar at the 21 Club. He was a Madison Avenue publisher, very successful. You know, I had a lunch with him a few times in the 90s, and he, you know, verified this story, how this giant man, Kosira wasn't that big, but he was a weightlifter, carried him out of this camp and like saved his life. So after the war, instead of coming back to the U.S., he went to move some shipments of material to what was then called Palestine. After the second time that the British arrested him and told him, don't do that again, he went back to the U.S., where he married the love of his life, actually his childhood sweetheart, Tony, had two children. He was a toy salesman, and then he had a factory in New Jersey, a plastic extrusion plant, and he was making plastic buckets and stuff like that. And he had this mold that made this strange-looking hoop. This was the hula hoop. And, well, he made he made buckets of money from that. And after it peaked, he sold it to General Mills. And it was like an early retirement, but he had a lot of energy and he wanted to do something. So he moved down to Miami Beach and he took over the Miami Design Preservation League management of their office. You know, these are, you know, activists. They're not very good business oriented, but he was, and he got everything on a sound footing. And both of us together, we were called the Schmader brothers. Schmader is Yiddish for like a rag picker or a rag salesman. And what it means now in Seventh Avenue in Manhattan, garment center speak, is someone is involved in the fashion industry, because we did the t-shirts, you know, all the merchandising, sweatshirts, you know, calendars and posters and so on. One thing we did is we went to Leslie Lott, who's a trademark attorney, and this was back in 88, and we got the trademark for Art Deco Weekend because we had to protect our brand. And Ira and I had this Schmader spiel going on, don't sell the tablecloths and cut more velvet. Well, German spiel is play, but spiel in sort of Yiddish is something like it's a play on words. So the 89 Art Deco Weekend was an amazing success. We sold so many t-shirts and we sold so many sweatshirts that literally we'd sold out by 3 o'clock, and we were saying to each other, don't sell the tablecloths because that's all we had left. And I guess we couldn't say cut velvet because there was nothing velvet in these t-shirts. Now, the good thing about this was a year or two later, the Miami Beach Commission finally saved the district. They passed enough laws. We lost like three hotels, including the Senator, which is still just a parking lot. You know, the Joni Mitchell song. And then there was the National Preservation Board. The whole thing was designated as a historic district. And so we kept the integrity of that entire neighborhood. So wherever Ira is right now, I've got to tell you, cut more velvet and don't sell the tablecloths.
Nick Spill with the early days of the Art Deco district in Miami Beach.
Yes, and Michael, can't you tell this man is a writer? He plays the long game. He's a marathon runner. He's not a sprinter. He starts out, every good story needs a location and a hero and a villain, and the more villains, the better. There are people who can tell a fully contained story in 3 minutes or 2 minutes, and I call them sprinters. And the marathon runners have so much to bring in, because one thing we all know wonderful storytellers like this who bring in this and bring in that and go off on this tangent, go off on that. And they are fascinating to listen to, particularly if you're not in a hurry and you haven't heard the stories before. They are wonderful to listen to. And this is, to my mind, Nick is that kind of storyteller.
I was thinking of different scenes, and he even has a flashback in there.
He really told this story on a number of different levels. I also loved that here was a British, maybe a little bit of New Zealand accent in there, maybe a little bit of Miami Beach accent in there, using Yiddish terms. Linguistically, it's called code switching, when you start off in one language and then you go back and forth. And he didn't exactly go back and forth into another language, but he used the term schmata, except he said it a little differently than my relatives said it to me, and spiel. And everybody speaks Yiddish slightly differently depending on where in Europe your ancestors came from, but also where your ancestors came from after they left the places where they spoke Yiddish as their native language. I also loved the reference to the Joni Mitchell song. I mean, this is a man who clearly knows a lot about history. He mentioned Lepke, the mobster. He knows a lot about culture. I mean, how much higher culture can you get than the Joni Mitchell song? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. This man is clearly a novelist.
Well, he is an author, Karen, and he's going to be appearing at the book fair.
That's right. The name of his book is Jaded Kiwi, and he is appearing Saturday, November 19th at 2 p.m. in room 7128.
Are there any other storytelling events in South Florida?
There certainly are. Tonight at 8 p.m. is Vox, the Storytelling Slam. It's free. Anyone can tell a 5 to 7 minute story. Doesn't have to be about South Florida. It's at FAU's Living Room Theater on Glades Road. For more information, either contact the Living Room Theater or send an email to me at cneil, that's C-N as in Nancy, E-I-L-E at FAU.edu.
And for more information, you can go to our website for archive stories and contact information, WLRN.org. Click on Radio and the Public Storyteller. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Mike. I'll see you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.